Welcome. Now, my name's Dee Ludlow. Now, before we get into this episode, go to the description, click the link, and get your M&A Mastery Toolkit. This is a free download which gives you some of the tools and resources that you need to start your M&A journey. Don't forget, go to the description, click the link. It's a free download, and enjoy the episode.
When you're buying a business, especially if it's a new sector to you, just chill for the first month. Just get to know the business. Don't just be like, oh, I need to be on a million because these do it. Nah, just get to know it. You know, business has ups and downs, and I'm going to show you more downs because everyone else keeps showing you the ups. What most companies fail to do today, I'm just trying to provide a good service and then be a nice person.
Communication and initiative.
Communication initiative.
Two things that go a long way with everything, but people tend not to do it.
I didn't even think about the sector. I didn't even think about, oh, how am I going to run it? It's business. If you can run a business, you can run some other businesses as well. You know, I don't want to do it myself. I want to own the business. But if you're starting a business, you have to do it.
So welcome back to the 5am Club podcast. We have a returning guest, good friend of mine, actually, Tej Singh /
Hello.
Tej Talks.
Hey, I'm happy to be here again. It's been a long time.
I'm happy to be here. We're in your humble abode. So
you're in my humble abode. Yeah, you're in the palace. Yeah,
we're in the palace. So we thought it'd be worth jumping on. Obviously, we talk a lot. You talk on the 5D program a lot, and you're very active in the group. But I think it's worth speaking to like the wider audience, a bit about what you're up to. You know, you did extremely well and scale very fast in property. I think everyone knows that. And now you're moving very quick and very fast as well.
Trying.
In the M&A space. So first and foremost, why did you even consider looking at business buying?
So I think I sort of had enough of property. It was a bit boring. It was, the market definitely changed when things were really overpriced kind of post-COVID and a lack of stock. And I was always going to launch other businesses. Property was just a stepping stone. So I suppose it then timed nicely with you sort of doing your business buying and teaching people in the 5D that I thought, hold on a minute, why don't I buy one? You know, because I suppose I kind of roughly looked at, okay, starting up like a food restaurant, how much is the, how much money am I putting in? I was like, okay, there's a chunk with no customers, no brand, no reviews, nothing. Okay. And I looked at some other businesses and thought, no, I don't want to do it myself. I want to own the business. But if you're starting a business, you have to do it.
Yeah.
If I'm going to start a recruiting business again, I have to recruit. I don't want to do that. So it kind of led me to think, I actually want to be a businessman or a business man, as JJ says. And I want to own more cash flowing assets, but ones that are interesting, ones that I can have an active role in. I don't want to be just like totally like, you know, you're an asset, go make money. And it just worked out the same, if not cheaper and easier. Easy is an interesting one, but it just worked out more efficient than starting up a business again, because I don't want to do that work.
Yeah, I think it's, easier, I suppose, depends how you look at it, but I suppose buying something that does already have income, already has some sort of infrastructure and staff, you know, those sorts of things are quite hard to grow into, you know, because when you are starting a business, you don't have any of those. I feel like you're just spending money or making money.
Basically, investing it.
So criteria-wise, you know, you looked at a few different sectors, and I understand that you had a specific criteria. You have your goals. I think it's different for everyone, you know, criteria, sector. But what did you, why did you generally pick the, I know there's three that you were looking at?
I wanted something I'd be interested in. That's the first and foremost. I don't need the money from the business, the property and education. It does its thing. You know, I live a humble life, as you've seen. You know what I mean? I'm not in Namos every week like you eating these £500 steaks. So, you know, I don't need anything. What I do need is something to stop me being bored, because you probably know I get bored easily. Something that I can be active in, something that I can build a brand in and create things and just something different, you know, from property, recruitment, marketing, which I've done. So that was the main thing, is like, am I going to be sustainable in this business? Am I going to want to be in it every day, every other day, doing bits if I want to? Secondly was future prospects, you know. So, you know, one of the industries was like car garages, one was like health. Yes, electric cars are coming, but we're still, you know, going to be driving petrol and diesel for a long time. They need fixing. I know it's a crazy market. We can pivot to electric as well. And then there's so many offshoots within that. Health, we're all dying, you know, slowly every day. You know, a lot of us, our lifespans are increasing, but our health span isn't. And so health is, everyone needs a physio at some point in life, a doctor, you know, Google's great, but you know, at some point we're going to need this. So I looked at, secondly, the future prospects, you know, is this something that if I buy now, in 15 years, I'll be like, cool, we're still making money and I've got another 15 ahead of me. Those are probably the main things, really.
I think it's important as well, because I actually read recently that the average lifespan of an S&P 500 company, which for those that don't know is the top 500 companies in America, lifespan is around 67 years. Ooh. Now it's 15.
Wow, so when you believe it.
Yeah, so what, talk off the back of what you just said, it is important to look at the future of the business, and because things change, and if you don't adapt to certain trends and just being quite agile overall, it's the blockbuster Netflix situation. So I think it's good that you're taking that into account as well on what you're thinking of, because there's going to be some things that, unfortunately, with technology, things change.
And there might be certain, like I'm looking at recruitment businesses now as well, because I used to run one for 4 years and it just makes sense.
Yeah.
Literally, and it's a great moneymaker, but there's certain industries within it which, if we have a conversation, I learn more about the business. I think those jobs and the age of your candidates who are doing these jobs, I think in 10 years, I don't think you're going to be around. I think it's going to be, the internet is going to take that over or something. So sometimes I'm like, look, I don't see the future. You might see it, but it's not going to work.
So on recruitment, I think recruitment now more than ever is a very resilient and strong business model. More people are opting out the labour force than ever. It is hard to get staff, and when you do find staff, hard to keep them motivated. And they want more money to do less work. So,
oh yeah, that's the dream, man. Come on.
So I think great business model, and I think that also there's a lot of niches in recruitment too, isn't there?
A million and one niches.
What are your thoughts on those niches in recruitment? What type of things would interest you, or things that you feel have the longest future prospect?
Tech, without a doubt. You know, how many years ago did I have the business? 4 or 5 years ago I had the recruitment business. Tech was popping then. It was a candidate shortage. It was all this stuff. Now, same thing. I know, you know, the top five big tech companies in the US laid off like tens of thousands of staff. So there is certain things to consider. But, you know, there's always going to be a role in tech, whether it's building a website, whether it's AI. Tech is always needed in some shape or form. I mean, our computers have two things, software and hardware. There's two levels of tech in that. Then they have AI. There's a third. So tech has so many kind of verticals in it that makes it a niche. Very hard to recruit in, though, because they're just so little and so few people who can do these skills. And there's always a new language being released. You know, like JavaScript has like Node and all these different other sort of mini languages, I'll call them. And then there's like 20 people who learned it in their room and they're getting paid £1,000 a day from everyone. You're trying to hire them. I'm trying to hire them. You know what I mean? What have I got to offer them? Like a Ferrari to work? Like this, you know, this is the kind of level it gets to. So tech is great. Construction in this country, where we still build like we did 200 years ago, no advances. There are there, but they're not being allowed. Yeah. Always going to be in demand. Yeah. Engineers, things like that. So yeah, for me, tech and kind of, I think they call it blue collar kind of things, always in demand. And then there's marketing and then recruiters themselves and a few other bits. But tech is a winner in everything, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I also, on the construction side, I also, on that side too, I feel that people that have a trade, I think that they obviously charge them more now than they did before, but I feel that there's probably going to be a time when that will probably go quite wild in regards to what they can charge, because only because if you look at like the people coming through, there's not as many people leaving school going in and getting a trade. So I feel there's going to be a point where it's going to be like, well, you know, there's everyone chasing the same group of individuals, and then it's like, who's going to pay the most, right?
And so, post-Brexit, I've spoken to companies who say Turkey has been terrible.
Yeah.
You know, there's that. I know we don't really hear it because the media tells us what they want to tell us. But, you know, without skilled people coming from there, a lot of people in this country don't want to work. There we go.
I totally agree.
It's too easy not to work, right? So
that's another conversation.
That is another conversation.
So, yeah. So, okay. So, bringing it back to your deal that you've recently completed on that. It's actually been quite a while now.
Two months, I think. Yeah, two months.
It's gone quite quick. But I know that you've been speaking to multiple sellers, right? But let's talk about this one in particular. What do you feel the challenges were at the start before you come to an agreement on price?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
You know what? Well, firstly, it was my lack of knowledge. Mm. I mean, yeah, I've been looking for 3 to 6 months on and off. Mm. So, and obviously I'm part of the 5D, so I had the knowledge, I had you to message. That wasn't really an issue, but if I had to say, that would be an issue. Because it's not like now where I see some accounts and I'm like, yeah, cool, here's the offer, here's what we're talking. There weren't actually that many, you know. Before the price was agreed, it was through a broker, so all the accounts were there. The information was there. It's part of a franchise, so they were there to kind of, you know, be the adults, I suppose, and overlook everything and answer questions. There wasn't anything tricky. I didn't even think about the sector. I didn't even think about, oh, how am I going to run it? You know, so I'm like, oh, how would I run that business? I'm like, just run it, innit? Like, it's business. If you can run a business, you can run some other businesses as well. So there weren't any challenges before price.
Do you feel as well, putting it bluntly, you know, just using just basic common sense when it comes to business? Because I remember when we jumped on Zoom one day and you was kind of like, this is what I think. You had your own spreadsheet, your own idea, and it was just like, yeah. You know, yeah. And I understand it's good to get that second opinion. I think that it's always important to try and get a second opinion, even if you're like, yeah, I know this is what it is.
Yeah.
It's always important. But yeah, I think that just in general, like, your property business is still a business. Like, you have a rental portfolio, it's still a business. You still have to run the business, right? So I think that a lot of the stuff, I think people do overcomplicate. Now, I understand there is certain niches and certain things that do become complicated and specialized skill sets that you do need,
absolutely.
which I think that you can look at a business and be like, okay, what's the management team? How strong are the management team? Is the leadership in a place where the value creation plan that you're looking to implement over time, are they ready for it? Because that's another thing that is very hard. But you can chase a lot of shiny objects in the space too. Now, what do you feel? I suppose the question actually isn't so much how you felt about it, but more a case of you had a strategy, and there's a saying that says the acquisition shouldn't dictate the strategy, your strategy should dictate the acquisition. Do you feel that you was like, I'm happy to have any of these, and you probably would have gone and had something else? Should it have given you an income that you wanted? Or was you like, I need to buy something in these sectors?
Okay, if it needs my ability and me to be kind of hands-on, then it needs to be in the sectors that I've picked. It needs to be something I enjoy. If it really is like totally managed, totally hands-off, MD, manager, and it literally is an asset, more of an asset, then I don't care what sector it's in, as long as it has the future prospects. Or if it's got a 6-year lifespan, if I can make X amount in 6 years, then happy days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so for me, it's more like I now am more open on sectors, definitely way bigger. I will acquire things and then build a strategy from it. Because for me, the strategy of why I'm doing it, like I said earlier, is for fun, enjoyment, make a bit more money, why not? You know, I haven't got like, I'm building this and this and I want to have the biggest marketing agency in the UK. I'm like, I'll have one agency, I'll have one cleaners, I'll have one this. I get bored really easily and I'm very fickle. So for me, I actually need to have things all over the shop. That's my strength, right? Whereas you might be more focused and you might say, no, I'm buying 5 in this vertical. So it's whatever people want, I suppose.
I also think that you made a good point there. It's like, you know, I don't have to be the biggest in the UK. And I think that when you speak to other people in M&A, I understand that there's like, because it's kind of no ceiling and you can go and do those crazy big deals and whatever. I know people, I always say like bigger deals are, you know, just, you may as well do a big one if you're going to do one because it's the same work. But at the same time, people, I think, maybe overlook the opportunity when you're buying a business, because you can buy something really, really small and get paid very, very well from it. And that's why you see, you know, people, you know, their neighbors, you may see a neighbor and be like, you don't know what people are doing, and you'd be very surprised some of the businesses people have, and they're very hands off, you know. So I think that's important to touch on as well. But so when it comes to the seller, I know you had a lot of back and forth with them, and you had a very strong team your side.
Yep.
I think you picked a great accountant and a great lawyer, right?
Yep.
What do you feel the challenges was when it came to negotiation?
So do you mean negotiation sort of on the price or kind of after that in kind of due diligence? Which kind of one we
talk okay, about? Let's talk, actually, let's pre the professional team going involved first.
It was pretty straightforward, you know, because the broker contacted me about it. I said, meh, 2 or 3 months later. I forgot about it. 2 or 3 months later. This is a common thing in my life, forgetting about things and remembering them and then buying them. I've done it with property so much. But, you know, and I was like, oh, go on then, let's have a butch. My pipeline was dry. I think I'd restarted sort of sending out emails and letters. Looked at it and I said, what was it on for? It was on for 75, which was like a 1.9 of adjusted net profit or EBIT, I think, roughly.
And that's what it was advertised for.
That was advertised for. And I was like, I'm not going to... I didn't see any accounts. I was just like, I'm not going to pay more than 50. I was like, whatever, I'm throwing my toys out the pram. And he goes, Ted, listen, just put in an offer. It hasn't had any interest for, you know, a while. And I said, then I reviewed the accounts and said, okay. I'm offering 47, full stop. I didn't give a reason. I was just like, come on, the broker's not going to give it. Just put it to him. And he came back and said, 50. I said, cool. 50 was about, well, now I've discovered 50 is like 1x EBIT or 1x adjusted profit, which is pretty sick. It might be more or less, it changes every month. I'm literally still discovering it. And then I said, cool, like happy to proceed with this. Obviously at this stage, I've just seen his accounts. His accountant doesn't have a website, you know, barely has any presence. So I'm always like, okay, the accounts say 50K, but because there was a franchiser, the turnover could at least be verified, right? So the net profit can't be verified, but in my head, I was like, right, we can verify turnover. And that's all that matters because I can work out the cost and, you know, the net profit I can get to. 50K is an absolute great price for this business. He's happy to let it go. He wants to do other stuff. You know, I spoke to him the other day and he's happy. He's traveling. He got his other job. He's spending time with his kids. He's happy. And you know, you might look at it and think he gave up 50K a year net profit for not much work, but everyone's different, right? Everyone lives a different life. So yeah, you know, price was actually, fortunately, very easy. Everyone I speak to now and every offer I'm putting out now, no, not at all. Price is the biggest issue and always will be.
Yeah, because even though sellers say, look, the money isn't everything, I want to make sure my staff are getting taken care of, it's always still about money. Of course it is.
Number one.
Always. So just before we get into what the when you've got a professional team involved, franchise.
Yes.
So it was a franchise. It is a franchise.
Yeah.
Because the business has certain aspects of it underpinned by other agreements and other people, how did you find that side of it? Was it pretty straightforward?
Yeah, you know, they've been great. You know, I think generally franchises are good when you're starting out for people who maybe have less business acumen, who really want a supporting hand, because, you know, the fees can be 5, 10, 15 grand. And I look at that and say, if I was going to start a business, I could do a lot with that. But most people can't. You know, a lot of people in the franchise are cleaners themselves. So they have no idea how to set a business up. They've been paid 11 quid an hour for the past 20 years of their life. It's so new, scary. And so it makes sense to kind of, you know, be part of a franchiser. For me, it's, you know, there's a benefit in that if some people don't pay, they take legal action. They kind of do the chasing. They do the following up. Everything is kind of super above board. Buying it was easier because they would work with my accountant and say, yep, we can verify that, you know, here are the contracts. There's obviously kind of downsides, you know, the contracts for the business are technically with the franchisor, not my limited company, as all franchises do. That's where they hold their value in having these contracts. But, you know, when I email, they respond flipping quickly, you know, generally helpful. They've introduced me to other people in the franchise to help, like, train me or, like, teach me certain, you know, calculating quotes and things like that. So, you know, I wouldn't, like, say to people, don't buy into a franchise. You know, if you want to grow a certain size of company, like very large, and you want to acquire others, and in that case, a franchise wouldn't necessarily work because there's going to be limitations and there's going to be, you know, like if I was to buy a cleaning company now that wasn't the franchise, I assume it would somehow form under the franchise. It would have to. And that's fine. That's what it is. That's what we've signed into. And if that was the aim, then I wouldn't have done this. But that's not the aim for me, you know? So with another type of industry that I might grow bigger, I wouldn't buy a franchise because I want to kind of scale that. So, you know, it's been positive. It's been fine. Yeah.
Cool. So when it comes to the professional team, so you've done your hard work up to this point. Great rapport with the seller. You know, you was at a stage where you reached an agreement.
Yep.
And now other people come and give their opinion. So
love opinions.
Yes. Now, when it got to this stage, what was the challenges you faced?
Oh God, I actually forgot it. I had to do therapy to get rid of this. Now you're bringing it back up. Oh God, I hope you got qualifications for this. So as we started into it, it was fine. It was like, you know, back and forth, this solicitor there, this and this. For the first day, may I add. First week went by, nothing from the other side solicitor. Nothing. Okay, 2 weeks went by, nothing from the other side. 3 weeks went by, you guessed it, nothing on the other side. 4 weeks went by, nothing. Now, the other side was drafting an SPA.
Yeah.
We know drafting an SPA does take time, but I'm sorry, solicitors, they're documents that you edit and you add bits into. But you charge a lot for it, which is, listen, I would do the same thing in their position. Yeah. But you and I both know it's an edited template. Hold tight, Lord Depot. which is fine. That's the bit, you know, you've got to have elements in your business where you make a lot of money for doing nothing. That is business. That's fine. So no offense, listeners. Like, you know, we're cool now, for now. And so no SPA was written. And I was like, 4 weeks, dude, for somebody who wants a quick sale. And then I also discovered with the franchisor, we have to complete either beginning of month or like middle of month because of their payment runs and stuff and their accounting. I was like, okay, cool. So this is another level of complexity. Mm. So after 4 weeks, we get no response, nothing from my solicitor. He's also sending some financial documents, but not everything. You know, we need access to his zeros. Mm. It's all read-only. We can't do anything.
Yeah.
It's so much easier. My accounts log in. He wouldn't give that for whatever reason. So I thought, okay, that's an orange flag, not a red flag, orange flag. Eventually, like, basically downloaded, like, 40, 50 reports, every single... And my accountants were like, Ted, man, we underquoted. I was like... so they quoted more on the next purchase, which I was like, that's fine with, because, look, I appreciate, from that experience, you should charge me more. Like, they're giving me a good price anyway.
Yeah. And so, it was very good in the deal.
It was, very... And they analysed it, you know, very well. Mm. I showed that to you. So they analysed it. They were kind of getting on with it. The accounts were generally okay. You know, the franchisor really jumped in and helped with that. Then the solicitor. So in law, whatever, you're not allowed to email or speak to the other side's solicitor. It's solicitor to solicitor, and then you to solicitor, and you to solicitor. Whatever. I don't give a shit about these rules, man. Like, sue me, innit? What are you going to sue me for? Like, you know what I mean? So I emailed the other side, like, a bit passive-aggressive, and said, is there a reason it's been 4 weeks and you haven't drafted an SPA? Is something a problem here? But I guess what? I kid you not, within 2 hours, Stuart, my sister, calls me and goes, I had the other side litigation solicitor on the phone to me, you know, talking about you, saying the reviews you left and the email you left and that you can't do that and stuff. And I was like, Stu, what can they sue me for? He's like, nah, not really. And I was like, well, then fucking carrying on then. I was like, where's the review, by the way? Because I can't find it anymore. But anyways, we'll just leave that there. And then, guess what? They responded to Stu and said, oh, here's the SPA. I was like, you lot are dickheads. So you took 4 weeks, and I'm not allowed to email you, but when I do, you take action. And by the way, I do this on every purchase, property, anything, because I know it works. And I know I'm not allowed to, and I know it gets their backup. Mm. So I do it, because they can send me a cease and desist, and I'll be like, I sent you one email. You know what I mean? It's like, they can't do anything apart from get their backup, but that then gets a response, gets them on the phone again. So I always do it. Like, I'm just like, I don't care about your feelings, innit? Like, just do your job. Do you know what I mean? So that happened. The solicitor from their side wanted to exchange NDAs, which we spoke about. NDAs are signed and sent. They're simple documents. They're easy. He spent 45 minutes on the phone to my solicitor exchanging it. And my solicitor said, Ted, you know, I've been in business 25 years. I never once have exchanged an NDA. He was giggling. He was just like, he's a nice guy, but I was like, he's a fucking dinosaur.
What are we doing?
And then when it came to exchanging on the business, he spent an hour at 5 p.m. on a Friday, because they're labs, talking through. I said, Stu, how long are exchanges? He goes, 5-10 minutes. You know, I was like, what the fuck? And then he wanted me to come to his office to sign documents. I was brother, and then this list of giving opinions about 2P, you know, the transfer of undertakings of protected employment, saying it has to be 28 days. And I sent four articles I sent to him, to the seller, saying, bro, read this. He goes, oh, my solicitor said 28 days. I said, we've sent you four things. The broker's saying this. The franchisor is saying this. What are you on about? I said, listen, if we don't complete by the first, it's going to be either the next month or good luck selling it because it's on the market for months. And he was like, went off. I said to the broker, listen, you need to sort this out. Like, come on, do something. And the broker was good, to be fair. And then I get a call back. Hi, Ted, we can complete on the first. The 2P's okay. So just endless, man. Endless issues and stupid shit based off things that are not correct.
What was really funny was you don't tend to usually send very long voice notes. but when I seen like a 7-minute voice note come in, I was like,
the popcorn
yeah,
out.
I was like, Tej is on a walk and he's venting.
Yeah.
He's in the countryside venting. Yeah. So, but yeah, nah, I remember how frustrating that was for you. Because the really frustrating thing about this is, we try and tell a seller, like, look, go and get proper legal, just go and get good professional advice. Pay for it. This is probably going to be the biggest capital event of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
Go and do it right and pay for it, because they're going to save everyone time, and time also costs money. So usually they don't, because they try and find someone that they know in the family or someone someone's recommended. So it's always good. We always recommend it, but they just tend not to go off the recommendation. Nope. And it's frustrating because your team was all ready and done.
We were there.
And then you're waiting for somebody else. So I feel that that's usually the most frustrating part, is because it's completely out of your control. But when you told me that you emailed, and I thought that was funny as well.
I just don't care anymore. Like, I will do what it takes to get the deal done. And you know what's killer is the uncertainty. You know, in this process, you're like, am I buying the business? Am I not? You know, am I, like, it's that I hate the uncertainty of it. And that, I think, especially when you're buying property as well, is just so, it's just the worst part of it. Like, not knowing, you're putting all this work and you're putting this effort in. Like, are you playing ball? Are you, you know, just do what you're supposed to do. Like, I know what I'm doing. I get why they don't trust us, because we're the other side. But and also on the solicitors, check that the solicitor has done a business of this scale.
Yeah.
This solicitor he picked had done M&A, allegedly, of a much bigger scale. So they were being all dinosaur-y about it. But we didn't need it for a 50 grand turn of a business. You know what I mean?
And do you know what? I think that that's important as well, is that you can actually do a bit of DD on their team if you want.
Yeah, and ask them as well.
Because, yeah, I know that I think Dean had a similar situation like this, where he said, now, the next time, on my next acquisition, I want a full breakdown of the other person's team.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because, and what they've done, because yeah, you're right, it's frustrating. And also the time you're putting into it, but also your team, you're also spending money at this stage. So,
yeah,
you know, like, the people aren't working for free. So
it is a lot. Apart from us.
Yeah. which is frustrating. So first 90 days, right? Less than 90 days at the moment, but did you have like a post 90-day plan, or was it just a case of, look, let me work out the day-to-day operations, see how the company actually operates? What was your thoughts at the start?
So two main things. Yeah, stabilize the ship.
Yeah.
Understand clients, try and visit as many as possible. They're not interested. As long as the cleaner cleans, I don't care. Happy days.
Yeah.
Try and upsell them on like air freshness and other little bits we can do. Try and upsell them on facilities management. Done all that. Not much out of it. Fine, it's cool. We'll keep pushing. We'll keep trying every sort of quarter. That was one thing, along with stabilizing it, kind of speaking to additional clients, saying, oh, we can supply bin bags as well, you know. And then the second thing was like starting or warming up the new business. Because, you know, it can take weeks to get a new client booked in. I've got some next week. So obviously when this goes out, I'll put an update out about that. But one of them was just getting that lead gen machine started. Because without it, you know, like, I want to grow the business. I don't need to. It's chilling. It you know, generates enough money. But I just want to grow it and get it going. And in order to do that, I need to be sending out hundreds of emails. I need to be finding premises, sending out letters, doing Google ads. So I've kind of been slowly doing that. But now that it's running and I know what's going on, it's 95% focus on new business.
Yeah.
The rest is maintaining everything's good. Cover work, which in August and, you know, is a big thing. And yeah, that's about it, really. Those were the two main things. And I think everyone, when you're buying a business, especially if it's a new sector to you, just chill for the first month. Just get to know the business. Don't just be like, oh, I need to be on a million because he's doing it. Nah, just get to know it.
Also, you don't want to make any immediate changes because there is an element. There is always going to be some culture in the business, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
When someone's acquired a business, there's a few questions there. They're like, am I going to keep my job? Is the new person going to treat me the same?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long is this going to last? There's so many different things on their minds. So you want to try and give them an element of comfort at the start as well. You mentioned facilities management. So I think we talked a few weeks ago on one of the sessions about synergies, and mm-hmm. sometimes people can overestimate synergies and, you know, try and force synergies. But obviously that is quite an easy synergy and an easy upsell. And it is technically the same economic buyer, right? So I think that's important that there is there. Now, I understand you said that you haven't had much traction yet, but that's something that you can work into. Other than that, I know you mentioned also about bringing it slightly closer to home or trying to get work closer to home. How's that going?
So, you know, with synergies, I think for me, the main thing is facilities management because it's so broad and there's so many different things I can do within it. I'm now actually looking at domestic cleaning. So not necessarily houses, but builders cleans and end of tenancy cleans because there's good money to be made in there. And with my property kind of background and my books and my brand, I know when I speak to agents, I can kind of be like, look, you know, I'll speak to builders. I've got a list of all builders in Hertfordshire, all carpet, everyone. And I'm just warming up my domain, which obviously takes a few weeks, as we know. I'm going to be emailing them saying, look, you know, when you're done your projects, get in touch with me. You know, one of the guys who did the plumbing here, I said to him, what are you saying? He's got extension in 3 weeks, he's finishing. Another guy who kind of came and helped, looked at this, he's got a HMO he wants weekly cleaning on. I said, we'll sort it out. So already, just naturally, that element has opened up. And obviously that requires a different type of cleaner, 100% with the vehicle, has to carry the Hoover and the bits in the car, which is fine. You know, probably come here and get top-ups of chemicals. It's a slightly different angle, but there's definitely good money to be made on doing that. And it just adds another arm of not consistent income. It'll be up and down because it's, have you got a job? No, okay, no worries. Whereas commercial is every month, pay $2,000, you have 30 hours, that's it. So for me, it's like another way to just supplement the income, you know, use the contacts I have, build something kind of in my area whilst also going for commercial. Because like I said to you earlier, commercial is, it runs itself. I do material orders, I do cover. I just had a client email me say the cleaner hasn't, like, why hasn't she done a certain part of the thing? It's a cover cleaner. I just text the cover cleaner saying, you need to go back and do it thoroughly. You know, that's kind of what I do a day, if that.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, actually, hold on, let's get some more activity in here. And then eventually I'll hire like a kind of supervisor or manager to do the material orders, to have the stock at their house and drive around, to do recruit, you know, almost like an MD. And I've already got some people applying for certain jobs who are, and I've got some people in mind in the company already. Because at some point, even though it's minimal work, I will be like, I'm going to pay you, just do that, and I'll take the profit.
Yeah.
But you obviously take a cut, you know. So yeah, that's the kind of, that's the synergies with it. It's a different sector of cleaning, which is exciting and different. And, you know, I get to see houses and see all the bodge work builders are still doing.
So when it comes to, how many actual people did you speak to? So how many emails did you send, letters did you send before you acquired the first deal?
That was when my lead gen wasn't huge. Now I've got 8,500 leads. Probably 9,000 leads, actually. And I speak to, like, my calendar's been busy. Like yesterday I had like 8 calls.
Wow.
In a week, I probably have 20 calls, depending. Look, 15 are just like exploratory. 2 or 3 are like, I'm sending you accounts, let's talk. You know, one is like, I am ready to sell, get me out of it. Kind of, you know, rarely, if that. So that time I would have sent out hundreds of emails. I would have had tens of conversations, maybe like 30 or 40. So, you know, not massive kind of amounts of conversations, but being on, you know, websites, speaking to, you know, there was a lot that went into it. And it took 3 to 6 months, I think, to find it. But I wasn't focused. I wasn't doing like what I'm doing now. Yeah. It was like I'm doing it on the side. And that showed.
When you think, though, to have 30 or 40 conversations, take on by a business that can give $50,000 a year profit, which you don't spend like loads of time on, when you actually think
about it. And I spend the money on.
And spend, yeah, and no money.
It's paying for itself for the rest of it. You think about it, it blows your mind, right?
It's unbelievable, yeah.
Like, so, it's crazy.
Because if you said to someone, like, look, you're 50 conversations away, they'd be like, I'm going to get for the first 49 today. Like, I want to, you know,
some people would say that. We know most people would say, okay, I'll do it. And then after 10, they're like, oh, it's too hard.
Yeah, true. Yeah, true.
I want my money back.
Yeah. True. But yeah, you're right. But if when you actually think about, you know, you had 30 or 40 conversations and then you found a business that's giving you around £50,000 a year, you don't put any of your own money into it, and you don't spend like that much time on it either. You know, you'd like to think that if everyone knew those 30 or 40 conversations, they'd be like, look, I want to get the next 29 out the way today. I know not everyone does it, but you would like to think that if that is possible. Now, yeah, it's impossible to track how many conversations you actually need. It could be 10, it could be 300. But yeah, the point is, the reward at the end of it is so big, you know,
it's crazy
to go through it. You know, is definitely worth it. So when it comes to risks at the moment, what do you see in the business that actually poses potential risks?
The only real risk that I kind of regard, there's two risks, clients and staff, as always, right? Clients can drop out, but they're on 12-month contracts and there's a long notice period and they generally don't tend to. And because I'm going to be growing it and adding more clients all the time, I'm not really fussed about that. When it comes to staff, finding good staff, keeping them is not as hard. There aren't that many complaints. I have one or two are particularly whingy. But, you know, I pay them all above minimum wage. It's not the minimum. Some get mileage if they're like cover cleaners. You know, it's like if they're doing training and stuff, I pay for that time as well. So it's not, and there's a bonus scheme as well. They can earn cash for like clients and referring cleaners and things like that. Keeping them isn't so much an issue, but yeah, finding them is a big risk. You know, taking on these new clients, looking for new business, but then needing the epic people to then back it is tough. But, you know, I had a recruitment business, so I can do the grunt work and I can hire them. But for me, the biggest risk is, and this is what the owner said to me, is finding new cleaners. That's it.
So there was no like revenue concentration, I don't think. I think that you had
pretty split. There's some big clients, you know, one or two big clients, but then the rest of it is really even.
Okay. So what are you doing in regards to help with customer retention?
So I'm checking in. The last owner didn't really check in that often. So the simple thing of sending an email every month, little phone call, letting them, like I have, the cleaners will let me know. Like if we don't supply black bags for a site or toilet roll, they'll say, hey, Tej, by the way, they're running out. Even though we're not supplying it, I'll send them an email, say, hey, Matthew, just an FYI, we don't supply it. We can, but you're running out. Just thought I'd let you know, not sure, probably, you know, just doing little courteous things. Or if the cleaner's like, oh, we've got a leak there. You know, a lot of owners would just say, okay, why are you telling me? I email the thing straight away and say, hey, by the way, you might want to get your maintenance guys in. Responding to emails quickly. I think a lot of people don't necessarily do that. Holding my ground, but also negotiating with clients when needed. But to be fair, the main focus of keeping clients is actually on the staff in terms of keeping them happy, using Blip, which is this like geofence tracking software, making sure that, hey, here's a reminder of what we do every day at this site, checking in with, you know, I have like a cover cleaner who's a supervisor. So she goes around and says, hey, Ted, this cleaner's missed this, or hey, they're doing a great job. So it's just providing a good, you know, what most companies fail to do today. I'm just trying to provide a good service and then be a nice person.
Communication and initiative.
Communication initiative.
Two things that go a long way with everything, but people tend not to do it. I think that you mentioned something good. There were response times. Like, that's really important. Like, if you are asking an actual question or you want an answer, it's nothing more frustrating than waiting 2 or 3 days for it, or hours, even hours. If you can get it as quick as possible, then great. I actually heard in a podcast, there was this guy, he said, and it's quite funny, he used to be in PE, and he was like, I went into a board meeting and they were saying all these complex terms and, you know, no one was simplifying anything. And he said, one guy stood up and was like, look, we're overcomplicating all this. He said, business is just people working with other people doing stuff for people. People drive performance. People underpin everything. Stop overcomplicating it. And I was like, it's so true. So I think that, you know, when you look at like you said, the two biggest risks are true. Customer retention and staff retention, because without either, there is no business. So, you know, it's good that I think you've identified that early. Now, key drivers in the business. What have you identified yourself personally as those key drivers?
So key drivers of revenue or key drivers of quality?
I'll say key drivers of revenue to start with.
The key drivers of revenue, I mean, really simply, because he's run it really simply, the core is the cleaning. The commercial cleaning, that is the key driver of revenue. There are little things like black bags, which they cost us 20 and we charge 25 for. We get enough of them, we make good money. There's feminine hygiene units, which a lot of people don't know. There's laws around you need to have one in certain most premises. And, you know, they cost us X and we charge Y for them. And they're totally passive. I don't do a single thing with them. Third party, everything. So there's revenue in these sort of add-ons, which they're not key drivers because they're an extra 100, 300, maybe at some point £1,000 a month. Mm. But one cleaning contract could be £3,000. So it's quite simple in the sense that the key driver is this. Now, when the facilities management stuff comes in, that will be a core of it and that will be a key driver. That's a third party. Mm. You're paying me X, I'm paying them Y, I take the difference. Standard. Mm. But I'm responsible for the quality, the insurance, the making sure it's done well, and my property experience obviously comes in with that. So yeah, it's, you know what, I know a lot of people in the group have complex businesses, different streams, different this, but it pretty much is the cleaning, the commercial cleaning is 98% of all revenue.
Yeah. And so, not to make a direct comparison, but looking at property, you've been in property, you pretty much, really, you've bossed the property size.
I try.
Yeah, you have. And obviously your podcast is probably, I would say, the best place for property information. It is, right? And I think that people probably agree with that based on the amount of reviews you have. So looking at property, looking at the passive side of property, I think, you know, everyone knows it's not as passive as it's usually made out, but it's as passive as you possibly could get for an investment, right? Especially if you have a good team. Mm-hmm. Now, average cash flow on a buy to let, I'd probably say across the country, would you say about £250?
£250 to now, if you bought in the past and you're on past interest rates and you're doing it, you know, now it's like 300 plus, mine are 400 on average. Mm. But 250, 300 is what I say.
Okay, so 250 on average, you're talking to get just the same profit as the business that you've just bought for no money. You know, you're talking what, 200 buy to lets?
Yes.
Now, I don't know about you, but 200 tenants.
I'm good.
200 houses. Now, the reason why I mention this is because, look, everyone's, you know, has a different opinion on, and also a different journey. Everyone's on a different journey and wants to do things differently. So, and also there's different things. Some people are in a real growth phase and some are want wealth preservation. It all depends where you're at. But, you know, in regards to, with a business, you're acquiring income. Of course, there's a lot of moving parts to it. And, you know, I'm not saying that you just go and buy any old business and you can't operate a business like a buy-to-let. It's a completely different thing. But my point is, would you prefer the business that you have now, the commercial cleaning company, to get that £50,000, or would you prefer 200 houses with 200 tenants?
You know what? It's not as easy when you put it that way. I would prefer the cleaning company for the simplicity, for the ease of having 14 cleaners versus 200 tenants. However, property offers a lot in that it's an asset that carries value and holds value and goes up in value. And I've already started sort of reducing LTVs in the past few years alone and like increased the value pretty like strongly. So it's not an easy one, but if it's right for £50,000, which would you rather have? It's a tough one. There's too many moving parts. Because with property, I could have it all managed. And I could really be fairly passive, but there'd be a lot of headache. But with the business, if I have three... You know what? They're almost equal. If I have three clients cancel at some point, that loses £20,000 of that net profit. If I have three tenants not pay, that loses whatever, a couple of grand in net profit. So it's a tough one. What I will say on the comparison is, though, this business I bought for £50,000 needed £50,000 to buy it, right? Or 25k up front. A little bit more for the franchise fee. So all I needed was £50,000 to get £50,000 of profit, right? One for one. For my portfolio to get about £50,000 of profit, I had to raise £800,000 and build a portfolio worth 1.3 million to generate that same level of profit. So when I compare it like that, I think, what in the actual fuck? Because I didn't raise £50,000 to buy the business. I raised 25, because the rest will be paid by the net profits in the business. So actually I bought it for like 0.5 if we really deep it. When I think about that, I think, did I spend 4 fucking years dealing with builders, right, raising 800 grand when I just need 25 grand, which I could get from a cash loan or whatever, to get the same? That is where the comparison is humongous, is so different.
But I think there's also, it is good to note that they're both underpinned by people, right? Again,
so
you know, a business, tenants, customers and staff, and property is still underpinned by people because it's tenants,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's, and I think that it's how you do both of them as well. Like, mm-hmm. you know, depend on where you buy, what you buy with property. And again, it depends what your vision is as well. But I think it's good to put it into perspective, into numbers, because of what, in regards to leverage, you know, a lot of people, you know, if you're in a grown a buy to let portfolio, maybe not so much now, but you know, a couple of years ago, people was probably over leveraging on a lot of their stuff, interest only, let's take the income. And you know, in, some people could say it's reckless, some people could say, look, I'm just scaling, right? It depends on what you're doing, right? But you know, and I suppose you could do the same with business. I think the side of business, of course, there are more moving parts, but there are a lot of moving parts of property too, remember, because you know, a lot has got to go right for you to get that cash flow.
Yes.
Like, it's not just, yes, I'm going to buy. Like, you have to try and hope you bought below market value.
Yep.
And then if you have, what you thought you wanted to spend on the refurb had to go all to plan. And then hopefully you don't undercover, nothing, no issues. And hopefully, yep, you had enough contingency to cover it. Then you want to hope that it turns out the way you want it to, the quality's right. And then if, yep, the quality's right, the value is going to come in and be like, actually, yeah, Tez, you was right on this. And then, yeah, then
there is a lot of play. Yeah.
I suppose,
right,
it's completely different things, but there is a lot that needs to go into both for them to work. But I think that leverage-wise, I think in business, if you look at certain loan facilities, you can like get 10x leverage. As long as the cover ratio is spot on, then yeah. But it's still a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
Cool. So what's next? You've got an opportunity to go and potentially work with the franchisor to say, look, I want more.
I've already said send me everything.
Okay, there you go.
And they said, Ted, give it a few months. Okay.
But I know you are looking at other things too. So what's next for your acquisition journey?
So, yeah, we had a purchase agreed recently that dropped out of heads of terms, which we're in litigation for, which I can't talk about yet. I need to check with the sister what I can say, actually, because I will happily talk about everything if he says I can. So hold tight, Ronald Fletcher Blake solicitors for that. They're the plug and spot the day for introducing me for that. Yeah. That was a shame because that was a really good business. It was in my passion, a kind of sector that I wanted to be in, food and hospitality. So, you know, I'm speaking to, like I said, I had 8 calls yesterday. I've had 4, you know, I'm speaking every single day to businesses about buying them in lots of different sectors. It's a bit slow, summer holidays, you know, out of office. I'm getting a lot of like, ugh, I think I should just go out of office. and so I am looking to buy more. I am now that I've got a business in a sector that I'm not that passionate about cleaning. I like things being clean. Hopefully you can see that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the next one, I really want it to be in something that is like I'm super passionate about, so I can build a brand and do lots of kind of fun things with it. So depending on the size of it, I will acquire 1 or 2 more. You know, I want my monthly net profit across everything to be about 20 grand. Mm. Once this business stabilizes, so basically in like a month or so, with property, with the business, with education, whatever, it's going to be 10 to 12 grand a month, sort of overall like personal income as such. I want that to be 20.
Yeah.
And then when I reach 20, then I'll retire again.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Be in the garden a bit.
Yeah.
See my Instagrams in the garden. And then I'll come back and do something different.
Yeah.
I get bored easily. I mean, me and M&A, we're going to be last another year.
Yeah.
Going to buy a couple. Then I'm going to run those businesses.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to, I don't know, you know, who knows where life will take me, you know?
Yeah. Now, I definitely feel that we'll see Tej retire and come out of retirement multiple times over the next 10 years.
I think so, yeah. I get bored.
Okay, just before we wrap it up, podcast. Now, one, you had, I think, the biggest property podcast in the UK.
Most reviews. It's almost at 1 million downloads now, yeah.
Okay, great. And I know that you did take some time off. You've been creating other content, YouTube, and other things as well. But you started the podcast again.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some great guests on there. You're talking about things other than just property now. You're quite broad. So where are you going to go with that before we wrap it up?
So it's about being better. So essentially, it's any topic that relates to personal development and personal development on a whole, whether it's what you eat, whether it's your exercise, your mental health, your physical health, your businesses, your investments, just how can we be better in any regard? And also a key point of the whole thing is we want to be better, but we also need to be content with what we have and accept and take in and be at peace with our current surroundings, because we can't change things.
Mm.
You know, and if we can, we will. If we can't, we can't. And so for me, it's almost discussing that constant battle of, hold on a minute, we're trying to be better, buy more businesses, earn more money. But then when do we ever just say, I'm happy? And this is why I do my little retirements, because I'm like, now I'm just going to enjoy. I'm just going to chill. Mm. I'm going to be even more present with what I have. And that's why, like, you and me are so different in, like, our efficiency. Yeah. I love efficiency. I hate wasting time. But I will just sit in the garden looking at my flowers and, you know, look at my strawberries and cuss the ants that fucking eat my strawberries. You know what I mean? Whereas you'll be like, who can I pay to look at my strawberries? Yeah. Like, you know, like, I go to a gym that's like, there's a gym literally here, yeah? Like, we'll probably see it. It's like 5 minutes away. I'm not going to it. It's good. Yeah. It ain't that good. They don't play good music. I go to one that's 15 minutes or half an hour away. Every morning, I waste an hour of my life. I can see you. I'm looking at you. You're shaking. You're withering away.
I'm going to make a prediction, though. When you have children,
I think it will change.
I think it will change.
I think it will, because I won't have the time, right? So I'm enjoying my frivolity for now. But yeah, it's just to, like, keep enjoying life, keep my businesses, do my thing, and talk about it and document my journey, as I do with everything. And to just show people, look, like, this is reality. It's not the shiny stuff you see. This is what happens, you know, like, it's, yes, it can be that stuff. And yeah, lifestyle is cool and all that. But the, you know, business has ups and downs, and I'm going to show you more downs because everyone else keeps showing you the ups.
Yeah. No, I like that. And I think that you're very transparent on your social media. And I think that it is important, because, you know, you can show, you get to decide what you talk about and what you show. So I think that it is good that you are transparent. And I think it's been amazing to see your growth, because I remember I met you in an auction room in Wales for the first time in your yellow t-shirt. So I've kind of seen the whole journey, and it's been awesome to see. So if you're not following Tej, make sure, I'm pretty sure everyone watched this, definitely following Tej. But if you're not, make sure you follow him. He's making moves in the M&A space now. And
trying to be like you, Big Daddy, man.
Keep an eye.